Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this 11th of June, and we are thrilled that you are with us. We have a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful panel, and we'll get right to it. We welcome your letters as well. Keep your letters short and to the point, on topic. Don't include links or attachments, and don't use abbreviations, and proofread your emails before you send. One letter per day per writer, please. That's a new one. We just added that one. One letter per day per writer, please. We thought we had it all done, and then we decided to add that one. That's good. So now that all the rules are out of the way, we'll give you the address, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Well, good morning, Joe. It's Friday, and Friday is good. No question about it. Yep.
Very, very nice. David Soares is here. He is he's the only other human joining me in the studio today. Albany County District Attorney. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great. I didn't realize that the xylophone could be such a sexy instrument. It was great music leading in here. I got to say, this is going to be a great day.
It's called Odd Shapes.
Wow.
Yeah.
They all made up the Benny Goodman Quartet.
That's right. We are also very pleased to welcome Ira Fussfeld to the program, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Ira, as of 20 minutes ago, was not scheduled to be on this program, and we didn't. We had an opening, and we put out the call. Ira, thank you for actually taking our call. I appreciate it.
Well, good morning, Joe and everyone. I'm not sure that what that says about me, that I was sitting around waiting for a call. But here I am. I have to say that being on Friday, which I rarely do, I feel like my role today is to explain a jobs report.
Yes.
And if that's the role, you called on the wrong boy. But I'll see what I can do. By the way, one other thing. Normally when I'm on the program, I try to get a good night's sleep. But because I wasn't scheduled, I stayed up and watched the entire Yankee game until almost midnight, and you could have saved me some aggravation had I not watched that.
Well, I still feel you'll be in fine form this morning, Ira, and I thank you very much.
Thanks, and it's nice to be with you.
For jumping in at the last moment. Judith Eng joins us as well, former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics. Judith Eng, good morning.
Good morning, and Ira, welcome to Fun Day Friday. This is the rocking
nice
day.
Nice to talk to you, and I'm sorry I haven't met the DA, but I look forward to that someday also, and I enjoy his work on the program.
Well, sir, you just mentioned that you're a Yankee fan, so you might want to take that back.
Well, we can go off to the side. I understand you grew up in Fall River. My company used to own the Fall River paper, so I feel like a fleeting connection there somehow.
I'm a Pawtucket guy, but
Pawtucket, we own that one also.
Yeah. You travel the Fall River to get the salted cod.
All right.
The salted cod.
The salted cod. All right. Let's get I was weirdly going to tell a cod story, but I've decided not to. Let's go to the stories of the day, and we'll get started. Thank you all for being here. Very nice to have you with us. So we begin with an infrastructure plan, shrug, I don't know. Bipartisan group of senators say they reached agreement on an infrastructure plan. Five Democrats and five Republicans announced a plan that would be fully paid for, though they did not offer details. Many lawmakers remain skeptical that it would be approved. So this bipartisan group of senators announced late yesterday that they had reached an agreement on a framework to invest in the nation's aging public works system, racing to prove that a compromise was feasible despite deep divisions over how to structure and finance an infrastructure package. The announcement came after a dizzying day on Capitol Hill, where senators involved in the bipartisan discussion offered conflicting assessments of their progress and declined to comment on specific proposals. But by early evening, five Democrats and five Republicans issued a joint statement announcing an agreement that would be fully paid for, albeit without any specific details about funding. The framework is expected to include about $579 billion in new spending as part of an overall package. That would cost about $974 billion over 5 years and about $1.2 trillion over 8 years, according to people familiar with the details. The outline is expected to address a narrower range of physical infrastructure projects and to avoid the Democratic push for tax increases, but it is also likely to suggest indexing the gas tax to inflation as one of the mechanisms for paying for the plan. So that is the news, which is coming out of Washington, and we, I guess, a little unsure as exactly what to make of it, of whether this is good news. As I mentioned, many many members are also very skeptical of it. So, Alan, what do you think?
Well, it would be a big victory for the president, that's for sure, and it would be a big anti-victory for the past president. And I am sure that he is working the phones right now to make sure that it doesn't happen. It really doesn't matter the level that it's coming in at. It would be a significant victory for Biden. When Biden left on his trip, he said, you know, he said he hoped that they would come up with something, and they have come up with something. And that's exactly what the Orange Menace doesn't want. He doesn't want anything in the win column for Joe Biden. So I'm thinking that that this is going to be a rocky road. Don't hold your breath till it happens. But on the other hand, think about it for a second. You better believe that the country needs it, that these Republicans are where they should be in terms of making it happen. And these are people who have been on Trump's suspect list for a while, and the Republicans, that is. So people like Manchin and others are involved in it. So it's something anyway.
Judith Henk.
Well, Washington, D.C. is littered with bipartisan proposals that have no details, like how are you going to pay for it? So I'm not overly optimistic that this is going to break the logjam. I am happy that various parties are speaking, but it's a little hard to take it seriously until you know the details. For instance, does it include a strong element to address climate change? Are we going to see Republicans, for instance, saying they don't want wind turbines and solar panels in their states? The fossil fuel industry is, despite their advertising, is still working hard to make sure there are subsidies for fossil fuel development and not clean energy. So I think that's going to be a litmus test for a lot of senators. Senator Markey of Massachusetts and Senator Wyden, chair of the Finance Committee, have been very vocal in saying if these packages do not include serious funding to address the climate crisis, they're not going to go along. So while President Biden has been trying to bring along, you know, the Manchins and the Testas and the Sinemas of the world, he also should not assume that the Markeys and the Warrens and the Sanders and the Wydens and the Gillibrands are going to go along with just about anything. So, you know, we'll see if this is just going in the recycling bin, or is this a serious proposal that has the financing figured out? I am intrigued by indexing the gas tax to inflation. I think that's really smart for both environmental and economic reasons, and would love to see the details on that.
Ira.
Well, like Judith, I'm a little skeptical. We don't know the details of the plan. We don't know what infrastructure is being targeted. We don't know, although we're hearing that they're indexing gas tax is the way they're going to pay for it, but we don't know that for sure. We see the list of 10 senators who are part of this negotiation, and the five Republicans are those who might be called outliers. They've gone against their party, and so I'm not sure how willing their party will be to go along with them in this particular bill. I'm a little surprised to hear Alan suggest that this would be a win for Biden. I guess it might be, but I suspect that if, in fact, it is passed as has been outlined by the people who negotiated it, the Republicans will posture that, you know, if it wasn't for us, this thing would have gotten off the tracks and it would have been too expensive, et cetera. And so we were able to rein Biden in. So, you know, Biden, I guess, will be able to take credit for a bill, but I do think it's accurate that it will be a lot less of a bill than he and that most Democrats want. And by the way, the last poll I saw was that something like 80% of the country wants to see new roads and bridges. And so he's on the side of the gods here, if you believe those polls. Yet he was his default position was compromise and thus watering down what his admirable goals were.
Now, far be it from me, Ira, to disagree with you ever. However, in this case, that was sarcastic. Sarcasm alert.
See, this is why I came on today, because I missed it this week.
Yeah. You needed some abuse
missed
on Friday.
Being swatted.
So,
yeah.
So, no, but I think Biden made it very clear from the very beginning that he was willing to engage in severe compromise. I mean, he said so. And I think what he did was to load it all up and say, okay, I'll take less from day one. And I think this is a lot less, but it is still a win for him. And I think that that's the one thing that Trump will not be able to stand for.
David Soares, it's on you, man.
Listen, you know, I have to say that every time we have a conversation about infrastructure, my answer changes, right? It's like every week, but this is where I am with the Biden administration and the infrastructure. It's like when he first started talking about infrastructure, he was promising me a 2020 BMW Z4, right? That's so 5 months ago, I was getting a BMW Z4 with all the bells and whistles.
Yep.
Today I feel...
Which, by the way, a sweet ride.
Today I feel like I'm getting an AMC Gremlin with Bondo, right?
Or a Pinto.
And duct tape.
Or a Pinto.
And duct tape on the front seat, right?
Yep.
Every week that seems to go by, we are getting less and less and less. And if you believe Alan, you know, 3 weeks from now, when I'm riding my Huffy, you know, down the street,
Huffy, yes. with the foam,
yes,
there on the bar, yeah.
Exactly. So when I'm riding around in my Huffy and avoiding potholes in the road, Alan wants us to believe that that would be a victory for the Biden administration. The reality here is that we're dealing with a party that is entirely disingenuous. You know, with respect to the ideals that they're tethered to, they're no longer fiscal hawks, because we saw what they did when they had control of all of the houses, yeah, in the last four years. But the point is that we've been negotiating against ourselves, and I'd like to ask Alan this question about what he thinks.
Anything, and then I'll ask you a question.
Okay, I just want to know, what kind of a job do you think the majority leader of the Senate Democrats, how has he been doing? Because we're talking about Biden. We continue to talk about the White House. But how has he been doing? Would you look at Sinema and Manchin's resistance and inability to come to any terms as a failure on the part of the new majority leader in the Senate?
So you're putting me on the spot here, aren't you?
I
would never do that to you. I mean, I wasn't going to ask you whether it was true that you were going to be the campaign manager for the mayor in the next... so, sarcasm alert. Okay, so...
Bring back that xylophone.
Yeah, bring back the xylophone.
So we've talked about Chuck a lot lately. I've been critical of Chuck in terms of his manner, his being out there. And I have heard from his staff about that, by the way. But, you know, you got to say what you got to say. The fact is, he is saying the right things. It's his tone, David, which is little bit tone deaf, for want of a better word. He needs to show everybody that he's capable of breaking bones if he has to. Others have done it. Think of Lyndon Johnson and others. You didn't want to get in their way. This is a guy who makes the right statements, shoves his glasses up over his head, but is not really being the leader I hope he can be.
I have to agree.
Well, good luck convincing Manchin and Sinema. I mean, Sinema is like in a whole other orbit, and it doesn't matter what Chuck Schumer does or doesn't say to her. She's going to go her own way. I think Schumer does have a close working relationship with Manchin, and he's probably, taking a calculated risk here. He publicly calls out a member of his caucus. Does that drive Manchin even further away? Ultimately, the Democrats need a bigger majority. It's this razor thin majority that they're trying to manage here. So, we're in a really treacherous place if the future of the world is dependent on Manchin and Sinema. And I think if you see Schumer starting publicly lashing out at them, that is a sign that we've lost them and they're never going to come around on any of these big issues.
I just have a problem with...
Okay, 20 seconds, but go ahead.
I see a big problem as to how you continue to energize a Democratic Party that went through everything that this party went through to elect a majority in the Senate, to elect a president, and to maintain a small margin of dominance in the House. I just can't see how you're going to energize that base again in 2 years. To go out and re-elect more Democrats.
We'll pause you there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I know Ira wants to get in as well. We will do all of that when we return. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Friday, the 11th of June, 33 minutes past 9 o'clock. We've been talking about a bipartisan group of senators announcing a proposal on infrastructure and if that is possible to actually pass. We have many letters on this, and I want to get to those. I know, Ira, you were signaling you wanted to get in right before the break.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that I don't think history is going to treat Schumer well if the path that we're on continues to be the path that we stay on. I understand that it's tough because of the makeup of the Senate. I understand all of the reasons why it's difficult to try to strike deals and get programs through in these times, in these partisan, non-truthful times. But to use an analogy that's both trite and dangerous to use in this day and age, Schumer is bringing a knife to a gunfight, and the Democrats just look they constantly look like they're on their heels. This does not look like a majority party, and we'll see. He still has some time before the next Senate election, but if things go the way they're going, he's not going to be the majority leader after the next one. And history, as I say, I don't think will treat his reign well.
Why wouldn't he be the majority leader? I'm sorry, Ira, I don't get it.
Well, I don't know whether the Democrats are going to continue to hold the Senate.
Oh, I see your point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Elias writes to us and says, there will absolutely be an infrastructure bill. I have no hope for Republicans, but Manchin is pro-infrastructure and it will happen. Remember, Obama had a great $600 billion bill that failed to pass. $1 trillion isn't peanuts. It'll do massive good in every state of the union. That from Elias. We go.
Which is why they don't want it.
David writes the quote. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ellen.
That's all. Okay. Which is, if they get it, they're going to love it. The American people are going to love it. The American people want it. They will love it. If there's one thing that Trump doesn't want to see happen, this is it.
Susan says, I agree with Alan that this potential new deal on infrastructure would be a win for the Biden administration. It sounds reasonable, and it could possibly pass. The Democrats need to realize that they don't have the votes to, quote unquote, go big until they get a bigger majority in 2 years. For now, they will have to take what they can get.
That makes sense.
Bob writes, all of our present political problems will shift dramatically when the global warming weather patterns reshape the water's destinations. Dry will get drier, storms larger, and more frequent, extremes more prevalent. Coastline surge damage will be increased geometrically. Hold on to your hats and enjoy while the band plays on.
Bob should not write Hallmark cards. That guy. Wow, Bob.
Cats,
you hit
cats,
me with all
cats.
Of that. God, Bob.
Go ahead, Jude.
But everything that is described is happening now. I mean, we don't have to wait for it. I mean, look at the drought in the West.
Right.
Intense hurricanes. I mean, sea level rise. I mean, what do we have to wait for? It's here. And yet there is discussion about not including the clean energy provisions in the infrastructure bill.
A few months ago, I really thought that the Biden strategy was to, you know, redefine bipartisanship, right? Because he was talking that way, because he seemed to have a number of Republican governors, Republican mayors. He seemed to have all of them on board whistling, you know, that tune. And I just thought that they would have done a much more effective job of really defining what infrastructure means to the states where those senators that seem to be most opposed. I thought that they would have done a much better job defining infrastructure and what it means in dollars and cents to those states. And instead, they just pivoted from redefining bipartisanship and tried to convince, you know, the Republican Senate. To no avail.
I think David's point is so important. It was just a few weeks ago that the Biden spokesperson, Jen Psaki, was saying the Republican Party is not just the Republican elected members in the Congress. We have support from, as David said, Republican governors, Republican mayors. I thought they were going to go out on the road and sell this. But something has happened in the last few weeks, which is really worrisome. They are negotiating only with the Mitch McConnell wing of the Republican Party, in which case, you know, we're going to get like a $2 million infrastructure bill that fixes one bridge in Kentucky and one road in upstate New York. And
the
that's
Huffy.
It.
Well, so to that, we got this letter from John who says, David Soares hit it spot on with his vehicle analogy. I was going to make an analogy to a computer. The original infrastructure bill was a full upgrade. This bill is just replacing the computer case and the cables inside of it. When the CPU fan is jammed, the monitor is broken, there's no keyboard, and a hard drive is dying. The Republicans are claiming, keyboards are a luxury, hard drives don't compute anything, so they're not really part of a computer.
That's true.
Well, this is all out of control, these comparisons. But David, since we're on this, David, I just want to clarify that your fancy BMW is an electric vehicle, right?
It's an electric vehicle with metal straws.
Excellent.
Fast. You can fast.
Glenn writes, by financing infrastructure through use taxes, thereby raising prices for consumers as opposed to raising taxes on the super wealthy, Democrats are cutting their own throats for 2022. The Republicans are seeing an opportunity here to hang price inflation on the Democrats. Another David writes to us and says, why is Alan so obsessed with Donald Trump's reaction as opposed to what is needed by America and the world in the infrastructure bill? I don't give a damn about Trump's reaction. I don't give a damn about whether or not Biden gets a win. Alan.
Hello. Hello. Look, here's the problem. The problem is that that Trump is in control of the Republicans. Just take a look at New York State, where they are. They're about to anoint Zeldin, a pro-Trumper in New York, blue state New York, as the candidate. Why? Because they are scared to death of Trump. And that is why Trump counts. It's not that I'm supporting Trump. Don't be ridiculous. It is the fact that this guy has them by whatever part you want to talk about, yeah. and they are
by the part that my dog lost this week.
Oh yeah, that part. and that's what's so disgraceful about the Republican behavior. They don't give a damn about American what's good for America. They care about not having him angry at them and losing their seats. And that, my friend, is why I said what I said.
Well, all of which is would point to the reason why this bill, this infrastructure bill, probably won't have Republican support, because the five who are on the committee may be sitting out there by themselves. You think there are going to be 10 Republicans who will break the filibuster to get the 60 votes?
Good point, Ira.
We go to Daisy, who writes, "It is awful. No raising taxes on the rich and corporations. Indexing the gas tax for inflation and charging for electric vehicles is no solution unless you tax the rich. Otherwise, it is a middle-class tax hike only. Remember the yellow shirts in Paris, and the climate change help is laughable. No, no, no," says Daisy. We go to...
Daisy is a friend of this station, and she's often insightful. But there is the small problem of how it is. You know, Vinny in my class used to say, stand up and say, is that how it is? Is that how it is, Ira, when yeah. Ira came? You know, and the way it is right now is you got to take something rather than nothing. And as far as I'm concerned, a win for Biden, and this would be a win for Biden, is essential.
Alan, were you a member of the Sweat Hogs? I mean, you mentioned Vinny in your class. Was that Vinny Barbarino?
Vinny Barbarino.
No, but I was a big admirer of Vinny Barbarino.
Horshack.
And Horshack, yes. Yeah. Those guys are probably old men now,
Washington,
right?
Washington, I'm trying to think. Some of them passed.
Epstein.
That's right. Ron Palillo and Epstein are passed, right, Ira?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and I can't think of the name.
Travolta has no hair anymore. He looks like he's ready to go.
Yeah. okay.
Not that that's necessarily an indication. By the way, do you think we can get David Soares on the Media Project? We could use another. We can use another voice going up against Alan every week.
Alan and I are soul brothers. We are together. I'm united.
We are together. We're the same. No question about it. I'm a huge Soares supporter, and believe me, I am.
All right. Let's go to a couple more letters before we go to a break. Mike says a fundamental problem with Joe Biden as the current figurehead of the Democratic Party is that despite his long and bad record, he is essentially an empty vessel. His campaign was centered on vague and ambiguous rhetorical appeals to restoring America's soul, dignity, and status as a global leader. How are we supposed to know when our national soul has been restored? We should judge the Biden administration on its accomplishments and not its vibes. Also, the panel is burying the lead on Manchin and Sinema. They are taking heat for other Democratic senators who want to keep their opposition to popular progressive policies on the down low.
That's true.
In the case of Sinema, it's all a question of the scope of her, her thoughts. Sinema.
Yeah, got it.
Scope.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
I think that's a pretty unfair letter. Look, we're
David's still laughing at your joke, Alan. I just want you to know that. Go ahead, Judith. I apologize.
We're 6 months in, and there is the issue of the COVID pandemic that I think Biden has done very, very well on. And there is the child tax credit, which is going to lift a lot of families out of poverty. I think we need to provide a little bit more time before making such a damning assessment of the Biden administration.
Well, I love our listeners. I mean, I know who many are, and they are, you know, not tolerant of the idea that in this wide country with all of these states, which are painted red, that there are certain realities that you have to deal with. And when we get a letter that says, no, 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 this is just bad, and we can't have this kind of thing, yes, spoken as a true WAMCer, blue state New Yorker, but that ain't the way it is.
All right, let's go to Lucy, who says, how can a gas tax raise more money for infrastructure? Electric cars don't pay for gas, and thus no gas tax.
Well, there's virtually no electric cars on the road, so don't worry about it. I mean, we are trying to get far more electric cars, but we're not going to risk, you know, that the majority of the cars on the road are going to be electric anytime soon.
Carol, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting that you say that, Judith. We here in Great Barrington have a very good supermarket, the Big Y. Oh, by the way, Big Y is an underwriter on WMC, but we have the Big Y, and they set up the whole rear of their gigantic parking lot is electric electric chargers. And I have to say, as I drive in there quite often, I don't see a lot of cars lined up to use them.
Yeah,
same thing with Hannaford. They have the charging stations. I mean, what we really need is the Big Y and Hannaford and others to electrify their own fleets, because their vehicles are emitting a whole lot more tailpipe pollution than their customers. It's nice to see one or two charging stations, but I've also noticed that they're not used very much. Hopefully that will change. And that is one thing that you cannot fault Schumer on. He is pushing electric vehicles harder than I've seen anyone push. He wants the cars made in the United States. He wants there to be, you know, good access to charging stations in public places, and also for the charging stations to be fast chargers. You know, you can't often wait an hour.
I do have to say, though, that it, and without pointing at any supermarket, but it was just mentioned, that when you go in there now, between the special parking for on-the-go, the much-needed and certainly not begrudged by me, the handicap parking spaces, and then the spaces for the charging, you know, you park about a mile and a half away. Everything is just...
Well, but that's okay. That's good. Well, that's exercise.
It's fine going in. It's a little more difficult because, well, I don't want to get into bags and Judith and all that stuff. But anyway.
I just have to ask Judith. Judith, does it cause you any angst knowing that your organic lettuce is being delivered by a diesel truck?
Oh, no. The angst is that it's all the lettuce is now in these little plastic coffins.
Yes.
That's what's getting me
a
more.
A plastic coffin. All right.
We used to be able to manage lettuce just as it is. Now it's all in plastic coffins. But I'll send you a picture of my homegrown backyard lettuce, which of course is only good a couple months out of the year.
But still, that makes a difference. I'm gonna let's take a break and we'll come back. We will get to many more letters and we'll get to more topics as well with our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Ira Fussfeld, and David Soares. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. No, that's okay. I was ready to go on. Mike... I was sort of ready to go on. Welcome back to the roundtable, to the panel discussion. Very nice to have you. And we have a great panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Ira Fussfeld, and David Soares. Okay, a lot of letters, so I will try to get to all of them before the top of the hour. Ben says maybe the Democrats wasted political capital in the beginning by focusing on their invented concept of human infrastructure, which was unpopular and confusing and distracted the conversation away from the actual infrastructure that most Americans want us to be working on. If they had just focused on actual infrastructure from the beginning, perhaps we would have a sports car or a new computer by now already. I don't remember the whole human infrastructure. Do you remember that?
Well, yes, they did have a lot of elements.
I talked about that very weeks ago, that they had put too much of non-traditional infrastructure in this package. It was confusing people. It was making people take their eyes off the ball. And this is not to suggest that I was against what these extra things were, but it was, once again, the Democrats' messaging was bad.
All right, we go to Norman, who says the chargers in the Big Y in Great Barrington are only for Teslas. That's why you don't see. That's why you see so few cars being charged.
That would make
sense. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But I was also going to say we heard from Grace, and Grace said that the co-op, the wonderful co-op in Great Barrington, have charging stations too for everyone.
Excellent. I'm sorry. Go
so
ahead.
So does Honest Wait in Albany. Most co-ops do, thankfully, but this is a big problem. The Tesla charges are different than the other electric vehicle chargers, so there needs to be some harmonization, so you don't have to have two sets of charging stations at every food co-op in America.
Elias says Biden's bill will pass with 51 votes. Reconciliation. He doesn't need 10 Republicans. Manchin is in. Biden rocks. That's from Elise. Elias,
I'm sorry. Good point. Really good point.
Jill says, yes, they got rid of much-needed parts of this bill, like the climate change part. However, if you keep it all in, it will be voted down, and not only will you not have the climate change part, you won't have your road fixed either.
It may well all be voted down anyway.
Tom says it's very typical of a conservative mindset. If items were not in previous infrastructure initiatives, they must not be added now. The world requires flexible government. It is no wonder conservatives hate science. Science is fluid. Religious dogma is set in stone. To each their own. It all matches. We go to very deep waters this morning. Carol says, I have one question. If this bipartisan group says there will be no tax increases, then what is their definition in light of the fact that they will tie the gas tax to the rate of inflation? Well, really, I guess I have a second question. If the tax increase is slated for those in the 1%, that is a tax. But if it is slated for the rest of us working schlubs, it ain't a tax? Question mark? Anybody want to tackle that one?
Well, he makes a point. Obviously, an increase in the gas tax is an increase in taxes. Quite right, but it is not on the friends of the Republican Party. It is a tax increase on the rest of us.
Well, I think that something happened this week. I forget the day that I was reading this, but something that should give us all a little bit of hope, and that is Ms. Yellen in the G7 discussing. The taxing all of these multi-billion-dollar corporations that tend to flee from one nation to the other, searching for tax shelters. And I think doing that is going to have a significant impact on our country and perhaps ease the burden on some of us.
Let's go to Russ, who says the moderate compromise proposed by the 10 moderate, quote unquote, senators would represent a stark defeat for the Biden agenda. The plan provides no new funding sources and no provision for the future challenges facing the economy. It would just do delayed maintenance. The future of wealth generation in this country requires serious structural changes in how we deal with climate and wealth inequality. That from Russ. All right. If nothing more on that, I will move on to other topics. Let us look at Al Gore on the Biden climate plan. This article in the Washington Post. The former vice president pressed Biden to stick with climate plan as liberals fear White House is softening its agenda. The president and former vice president had a private phone call amid concerns that the White House might strip climate change from the infrastructure deal. We touched on this just a moment ago. What say you, Judah, think?
Well, this is extremely worrisome. And the Washington Post story reports that John Podesta, who's very close to Biden, orchestrated Al Gore calling Biden. And that means that the White House is seriously considering taking the climate provisions out of this bill, which would just be devastating. I am not as well sourced as those guys are, but I am hearing the very same thing, that the Republicans are adamant that there not be climate change provisions in this bill. And it's because the fossil fuel industry has tremendous influence in the Republican Party. And also, I might add, in the Democratic Party, not nearly as much, but the fossil fuel interests are still at it. And there's some talk of, well, we'll take the climate change provisions out of the infrastructure bill, and then we'll circle back later and do a separate climate bill. No dice. You know, you cannot fall for that old trick. So, you know, the environmental community rallied around Biden and Harris. People worked hard to get them elected, and this is vitally important. I think one ray of hope is Ron Wyden, the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, has said that unless there is climate change funding in the infrastructure package, along with raising taxes on multinational corporations, he's not going along on this ride. And I think Ron Wyden represents a lot of Democratic senators. So, you know, this is a real gut check time. A lot of people, you know, put their lives on hold and went and worked in the Biden administration to advance an urgent climate agenda, including on the international stage. I mean, if the United States doesn't get its act together on climate, it's very hard for us to tell other countries to do the right thing. And rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, while very, very important, is not enough. I might add, if we have time, we have similar problems in New York. The state legislature just adjourned. And I would say on the climate change front, it's worse than even at the federal level. The legislature failed to pass the Climate and Community Investment Act. The Senate passed a good bill to address carbon emissions from Bitcoin mining, but oddly, the Assembly didn't. A really bad bill on cement production, setting up a bogus advisory committee, was approved. Bad appointments to the Public Service Commission. So this is really worrisome. This is New York. It's not Texas. So the New York State Legislature blew it on climate change in this session. And now there's tremendous worry that the stimulus package is not going to have the climate change provisions that are needed to avert a climate catastrophe.
Alan?
Well, I agree with you, Judith. These are all very important and formidable issues. However, I hope that you're not implying that the environmental community in this country didn't understand there was a big difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
No, of course. And that's why everyone worked so hard for Biden.
Well,
Biden
Biden
was not most people's first choice. But once it was Biden versus Trump, the environmental community rallied around Biden and did a ton of work to get him elected. And now there is an expectation that he will do something on climate change besides give good speeches. His speeches are great, but show me the money.
David, you were going to say?
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, in that this infrastructure bill, so much of it was personalized, right? There's the environmental infrastructure portion of it. There's the human infrastructure portion of it, and then roads and bridges. When the Biden administration began negotiating with the Republicans, and just last week they were willing to cut, you know, their initial sticker price by such a dramatic amount so quickly without even the appearance of arms being twisted. Well, we all knew that, you know, because this had been defined in such human terms, that we were going to see significant and very important portions of the infrastructure bill being cut. And I just, again, I'm scratching my head and I'm not understanding how, when the people that are negotiating, sitting at the table, how they didn't think that this was going to impact, you know, the environmentalists, all of whom were very supportive of this administration. I think right now they have a black eye, and you're not calling Al Gore to make personal phone calls to the president if the entire environmental, you know, community wasn't so alarmed.
Alarm. There you go.
That's an alarm here. So I'm out. Well, you take care of that. I'll figure out who that is. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a break. Seems like a fine time for a break, doesn't it, Ray? Seems like a fine time for a break. Yeah. Yeah, he's going to do a newscast.
They're just trying to sell auto warranty or
something.
It's just spam.
Yeah. We'll figure it all out. We'll be back in a few minutes. In the meantime, enjoy Ray and his newscast. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Ira Fussfeld, and David Soares, all making up the group. We welcome your letters as always. Panel at WAMC.org. One, two, three, four reporters worked on this New York Times story, which I'm going to talk about in just a moment. It is entitled Hunting Leaks, Trump Officials Focused on Democrats in Congress. This is a Times exclusive, and I wanted the panel to comment on this as the Justice Department investigated who is behind leaks of classified information early in the Trump administration. It took a highly unusual step. Prosecutors subpoenaed Apple for data from the accounts of at least two Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee, aides, and family members. One was a minor. All told, the records of at least a dozen people tied to the committee were seized in 2017 and early 2018, including those of Representative Adam Schiff of California, then the panel's top Democrat, and now its chairman, according to committee officials and two other people briefed on the inquiry. Representative Eric Swalwell of California said in an interview Thursday night that he had also been notified that his data had been subpoenaed. Prosecutors under the beleaguered Attorney General Jeff Sessions were hunting for the sources behind news media reports about contacts between Trump associates and Russia. Ultimately, the data and other evidence did not tie the committee to the leaks, and investigators debated whether they had hit a dead end, and some even discussed closing the inquiry. But, William Barr revived it all, languishing leak investigations after he became attorney general a year later. He moved a trusted prosecutor from New Jersey with little relevant experience to the main Justice Department to work on the Schiff-related case and about a half dozen others, according to three people with knowledge of his work. Final note on this before we go to the panel. The zeal in the Trump administration's efforts to hunt leakers led to the extraordinary step of subpoenaing communications metadata from the members of Congress, a nearly unheard-of move outside of corruption investigations. Who would like to begin? Alan?
Well, Trump is a fascist. We know it. We know that everything he was trying to do was going to lead in the direction of an autocrat, a dictatorship. It's just what he wanted. This is no more than that. Now, with that said, I want to be clear that there have been many leaders in this country who have been frustrated by leaks and who have tried their best to find out who did it, who done it. So it's not anything that's new. It's just the degree that he has moved to. And when we say Barr...
Yes.
Barr decided to do it. Believe me, it wasn't Barr. It was the guy on the other end of the telephone with the red hair at the time.
Well, doesn't it make the Kamala Harris William Barr exchange during the hearings when she had asked whether or not anyone from the White House had pressured him, inquired of him to begin, looking at various elected officials who happened to be Democrats. So, and William Barr had actually performed verbal yoga to avoid answering, the question directly. So I think that's something that we need to go back and reexamine. But the idea that a weaponized Department of Justice under the Trump administration, engaged in unethical, perhaps illegal, conduct against their political enemies is like being shocked that your kid was eating chocolate like on Halloween. It's like so not surprising. This is what we need to expect. I understand, and I believe that we're going to see a number of hearings, but under this new administration, what's going to happen is a number of people will receive their walking papers, because anyone who was involved in this investigation who had been career prosecutors, first of all, I don't believe the career prosecutors would have engaged in this conduct. But there are a number of people that were appointed by Sessions, that were appointed by Barr, who have no devotion, to the letter of the law. And so I think what we'll see are all those holdovers who are currently sitting in the Department of Justice occupying various offices being asked to leave this week.
Well, I'll tell you, when I first heard about this story last night, the first thought that crossed my mind, and Alan alluded to it, is If there is anybody who doesn't think that Trump did, and if he ever to get back into office, would continue to dismantle the democracy in this country, they're sadly mistaken. They need to look at this story as, I don't know if it's example one, but it's certainly one of the major examples of it. Alan's correct. Obviously, people, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, are always angry and interested, to say the least, in finding out who leaks about what they think is private information. But we're talking here about the executive branch infringing on the legislative branch. I mean, it just stinks from one end to the other. And there's nothing insightful at what I just said, but other than beware, folks, because this is what we're going to see more of if, as Chris Matthews says, this crowd gets back in.
Right. Judith?
Well, remember, this is in the context of us recently learning that the Trump administration attempted to get the records of reporters from CNN, Washington Post, and New York Times. This is a whole different level, though. Getting the records, the emails, the correspondence, the phones of elected members of Congress who you oppose, I think, is a first. I mean, I'm sure LBJ tried to intimidate Congress and get information, but now we're in the information age where you can get emails and texts, and this is unbelievable. It's believable that Trump tried it. It is unbelievable that they succeeded. I think it reminds us that there are so many bad things that Trump and his cronies did that we'll never find out about. I mean, I think over the next, 5, 10, 15 years, there'll be deathbed confessions and you'll get a little snippet here and a little snippet there. But, there are always books written post-presidency. I'm not going to read any of the Trump books. I don't think I could get through a chapter. But what you really need...
Very large.
Yeah. What you really need is investigative reporters just pulling out things like this.
I actually don't think that it's going to take a lot of effort at all to get a lot of that information, Judith, only because the swamp monsters that made up this administration, these are not people that are loyal to anyone but themselves. And I think that you will see more book deals. And the other thing too is that Trump and these fools, they didn't cleverly do what they did. They did it kind of out in the open. They stumbled, And the difference between Barr and Don McGahn, as far as I can see, with the very limited transcripts that I think are being made available for us, of Don McGahn testifying, in closed doors, is that Don McGahn his phone would ring, and this guy would say, "Hey, let's do this," and he'd be like, "Yeah, okay, sure," hang up the phone and not do it because he knew that this president was crazy. Bill Barr would get those calls and then go out there and get police to bring tear gas and remove peaceful protesters so that we could have a book photo out.
Well, David, I'm glad you mentioned the exchange with Kamala Harris. I went back and looked at that video last night, and sure looks like Barr is in contempt of Congress or lying to Congress or something. I mean, he looked like he swallowed a canary, and she was asking a pretty direct question, and we now know that he lied to her, the vice president.
Well,
see if anything happens there.
I'm curious because you brought up this point initially, Judith, and to David as well. One of the things that surprised me about the story is that this all happened in 2017, and we're just hearing about it now. Given the, transparency, but let's just say the ineptitude of hiding a lot of this stuff, you would think we know about it before now.
No, here's a couple of things to really think through. We didn't have a transition, right? Biden didn't have a transition where his people were beginning to take over certain positions. That poor guy, Merrick Garland, he's coming in to like a Costco warehouse full of boxes and other crap. And he's just, they're just starting. So expect this stuff to just continue to flow from the Department of Justice and various agencies who still are being occupied by some of Trump's cronies. But you'll see this for the next 3 years. Just everything that they find, they'll continue to put it out there.
But isn't that kind of like just that last scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they're just, you know, they're taking all the stuff in the big warehouse and just putting it so they can hide it, and, you know, it just goes more to the... Yeah. Into the pile of stuff.
The problem is that if you're with the Department of Justice and you're Merrick Garland, it's not just taking and uncovering the stuff. It's having to take it, do an analysis, engage in interviews, and determine whether, you know, the conduct is unethical, immoral, or illegal. Because if it's just unethical, you can just put it on the side of the road, right? And then the press will take a look at it, will report it out. But if it's illegal, well, now you're under an obligation to investigate. So that's the challenge that they have.
All right.
Why would they look at the records of family members of members of Congress?
Yeah, their kids.
I'd like
to know more about that.
Well, it's me looking at my son and saying, hey, let me borrow your phone. I want to call this reporter. And talk to him about something. And so it's the nexus of phones available to the elected officials that they suspect are the leakers.
So children of members of Congress, never loan your phones to your mothers or fathers.
No. Go on a private.
I'd be curious. I don't know if you discussed this last week. I'd be curious in what David's opinion is of the DOG, the current DOG, defending Trump on that sexual assault charge. That's
the E. Jean Carroll.
That's very interesting because it's one of those things where it's difficult to explain, right? But I see Merrick Garland's rationale that the underlying issue is horrible, right? The underlying issue of the sexual harassment, all of that, it's just horrible. But the comments that this president made, he made while he was president. And therefore, the question becomes whether Department of Justice has an obligation to defend the president when the president made remarks while he was president. It's a very technical, he probably had reasons. He had reasons that he could have cited not to decide to defend the Trump administration, but he's also looking at precedent and would not want to violate that precedent for purposes of not only his administration, but for the administrations in the future. So I do get the very technical argument for continuing to protect or represent the president in that regard.
But can you do sort of a half-assed job on it, or?
Well, no, not allowed.
Not allowed.
Yeah, you can't really do it. You ethically,
you
have
gotta
to
do it. Pursue.
But it's just like Mueller, right? I mean, we talk about, well, why didn't Mueller, you know, investigate this, investigate that? No, Mueller read the letter of the law and focused his investigations on the very limited areas that he could, and then he provided information to other prosecutors where he found crime. And so I understand why the public would have such a visceral reaction to Merrick Garland when he decides and makes this decision to protect, the presidency. It's not a personal decision to protect Donald Trump, but a decision to protect the executive branch of government.
Judith?
Yeah, the lawyers at the Justice Department and State Attorney General's office have ethical obligations to defend their clients, and their clients are former elected officials, current elected officials, and agencies. Not always current elected officials. I mean, if you look at the Cuomo stuff, the Attorney General of New York is not representing Cuomo, but they have rules on who they have to represent.
Are you kidding? Let me ask you all this question as you're being so studiously, I don't know what
what's the word.
But what is the word without that you're allowed to say on the radio? But here's the problem. The problem is, when Donald Trump wins the presidency again because of all his crooked shenanigans and changing state laws and doing everything that he's doing right now, and now Biden says, you have to defend me, do you think Donald Trump is going to do that? Ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think the difference here is that you have an administration that understands and obeys the Constitution, and you have another administration that doesn't. You know, and Alan, I also want to point out in the last subject that we were talking about with the subpoena of telephone records and everything else, your favorite subject also is you know, quietly embedded there. There was a judge that had to sign off on some of these things, and there was a judge that had to sign off on the gag order of Apple. And so I think you start to see, you know, that big plan, you know, sort of taking place right in front of our eyes. You have a Trump DOJ and a Trump appointed judge, and this is what you have.
And I can't help but remember how the Attorney General of the United States, as the Trump administration was coming to an end, slunk off into the dark. You know, basically, it was so clear that he had had enough, and that he was just being asked to do too many things that smelled of, you know, political prostitution.
Mm. Oh, so, I don't think it was because
pretty late.
Yeah, I don't think it's because he had some epiphany or you know, we found out what Bill Barr's bottom was. I just think that he just wanted out before the end. Trust me, I don't think that that man has a reputation that he could lean on any longer. He's destroyed.
Everybody
vacation time.
Everybody has limits. Everybody has limits. Sooner or later, you get to the bottom and you just say, I can't do this anymore.
Ira, you opened this line of inquiry. Is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I thought David's explanation was very good, and I liked Judith's use of the word ethics. I mean, this is the current administration is ethical. It's so it would seem so far. It campaigned on bringing ethics back into the government, and as a result, it is the DOJ under Biden is doing what a DOJ under Trump would obviously not do. Trump would not look to defend another person of the other party, whereas the current president sees it in the same way that David explained. So
So what are we going to do about this?
Merrick Garland is taking a lot of heat on the internet for this, but he's apparently doing the right thing.
Alan?
I mean, what are we going to do about this? We have, as you guys put it, an ethical approach from this particular administration. We have the other guys who are fascists, and I'm telling you that, run by a fascist, who would take over the United States and destroy our democracy. And we're saying, okay, we'll show them, we'll play by the Marcus de Queensberry rule. What David and Ira and Judith, what is it that, how are we going to fight this thing, so that they don't win because they don't play by the rules?
You can't force. I learned very quickly in the infancy stages of my political career that you can't argue with a liar, right? Because they're going to lie, and you will continue to tell the truth. They're going to lie. The problem with Donald Trump and the problem with the previous administration and the problem with the Republican Party as it is right now is that there is such temptation, right, to take off your gloves and engage in battle in the ways that they do. But if we were to do that, we would no longer be a nation of laws. We would be violating, in you know, our Constitution for the sake of victory, and
for the sake of having a Constitution, David.
I don't think you can violate the Constitution and say that you're trying to preserve the Constitution by violating.
No. I agree. I hear where you're coming from. I like what you're saying. However, I am telling you, we are facing something that is really unprecedented in this country, with this guy. And we know what he tried to do, and he is, I keep using the word fascist, but he is a fascist.
He is a fascist, and the problem with it is the fact that, you know, look, there is such a disconnect, a cognitive disconnect in the American, in the fabric of our society right now, where words like socialism are trigger words, but you know, they're running away from socialism only to embrace fascism. It's incredible to me when I hear people talk, and then, you know, oftentimes it's the trucks with the largest flag, you know, that's flying. That seem to know the least about the Constitution. And then, you know, this idea, and you and I have been talking about this for a while now, Alan. It's the packing of the courts with...
That's one thing it is.
Yeah. Well, it is, but 15 those, are the second people warning. That, those are the people that define the Constitution, right?
We have to fight, and we have to fight like hell, and we have to fight honestly within the rules, and we are not doing that right now.
All right, we'll pause there. When we come back, we'll have our last go-around with our panel and continue our conversation. We welcome your joining us. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last call here, last go round with our wonderful group, Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Ira Fussfeld, and David Soares. We welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org. A couple lingering letters here that I want to get to before we go to our final topic, or one of our final topics. Sean says, how does the average family pay for an electric car, solar panels, higher gas prices while still raising a family? That's what the progressives have to tell the average family in this country. Do you have an answer, Judith Henk, to put you on the spot?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. There are tax credits that are bringing improving affordability for home solar panels. If you live in New York, go to the NYSERDA.gov website. But it's supply and demand. Solar panels and electric cars cannot just be for affluent people. And that's why I'm personally excited that Chuck Schumer, Mr. Middle Class, is making electric vehicles one of his top priorities. So it is affordable.
All right. We'll go to this letter from Bill. The Orange Menace often claimed he did nothing nefarious in connection with Russia. No collusion. So why was he concerned about leaks about this non-event? Well,
the truth of the matter is, and I'm no Trump fan, as you all know, but the truth of the matter is that it is not unusual to see presidents trying to find out who did the leaks. Right. I mean, Obama yep. did it. So I'm interested in this letter. Who said, Alan, it is like when the enemy is using torture on our troops, and then we say, oh, we need to use torture by some other name because the enemy is horrible. It's an extreme comparison, I admit, but Merrick Garland is trying to maintain our democratic structure of rules and norms, and that's from Karen. Yeah, well, look, Karen, I hear you, believe me, I hear you, and I certainly agree with you when it comes to torture. However, I also believe that this guy, Trump, has no limits whatsoever. And it is so clear from what he has done and what he's trying to do that if we don't fight and fight like hell in terms of maintaining what we have in this country, we will lose it. It's that simple.
I think you just have to also think about who we're talking about here, right? I mean, this is the fool that goes to present remarks to the law enforcement community, and he's suggesting that cops need to, you know, bang some heads on the cars before you put people in. He's the one that incited violence at his rallies. So just remember that that's who we're talking about here.
Anyone else? Okay, no? Okay, we'll go to this letter from Julius, who writes, Alan is right again. Unfortunately, the Republicans and Democrats are playing by two different sets of rules, and the hardball thuggery of the Republicans will win unless the overwhelming majority of good Americans rises up and throws them out. Kathleen says, didn't Bill Clinton face a civil suit while he was president, and the Justice Department didn't defend him?
I don't know what we're talking about here with Bill Clinton's lawsuit. Was he president when?
Yeah, I don't know. Was it after? I don't know. That's a good question. I assume it was Monica Lewinsky's suit, but I don't know. Yeah, is that true?
I don't know which lawsuit we're referring to, because I, as a president, I imagine you're being sued all the time. But if you're not, if what you're being sued is not within the scope of your job, and if you're not in office, I imagine the Justice Department is not going to be defending you.
So for that letter, well, I need more information. Go ahead, Alan.
And then there's Peter's letter has a terrific topic sentence. I must admit, Alan is right. Hitler's concentration camps were full of the opposition who mistakenly believed that their honor and adherence to the law would eventually create the circumstances to oust Hitler from power. It didn't work then. It won't work now. The Republican push towards fascism must not be underestimated. And that's from Peter.
Now Alan, does your dog's paws get tired at typing Alan is right and sending these letters, or does he cut and paste?
No. I think he does it all.
All right. You know, I think at this moment, I cannot think of a better time to discuss environmental soot.
that's a rock band.
Yeah,
that's
environmental
like a rock band.
Soot.
I get it.
Nice intro, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So the EPA is to review rules on soot linked to deaths, which Trump declined to tighten. The Biden administration says it will consider tougher limits on a deadly air pollutant that disproportionately affects low-income and minority communities. This is what is referred to as fine industrial soot, one of the most common and deadliest forms of air pollution. I turn it over to Judith Henk.
Also known as particulate matter. So before I want
out... Oh, I like
out,
industrial soot better. But okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's the name of a rock band.
Yeah.
Opening on Friday night, industrial soot.
Played Northeast Concert Hall for a while, did they? Go ahead.
This is about health. This industrial soot or particulate matter is linked to heart attacks, strokes, respiratory disease, and premature deaths. And this is a really important part of the Federal Clean Air Act, is to make sure that air pollution doesn't kill us. Pretty reasonable. There's a provision in the law that requires EPA to take a fresh look at the federal regulations every 5 years. And so when the Trump administration did the legally required fresh look, they said no need to tighten the standards. Everything is fine, which was pretty bogus. So the Biden administration is now doing the five-year look and will very likely recommend tightening these air pollution controls. And I know it sounds distant, it's to reduce air pollution at power plants and industrial facilities, but people locally should think about facilities like the Lafarge cement plant in Queens, or the Lehigh cement plant in Glens Falls, or the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator next to public housing in Cahoes. This is all public health protection. So the science strongly supports tightening these regulations. And if you look at the history of the Clean Air Act, as we get more science, the regulations typically get stronger, except during the Trump administration. So this is an opportunity to get EPA policies back on track. However, it will be vigorously opposed by the cement industry, by the oil and gas industry, by the chemical industry. So this is where you need strong environmental leadership from the Biden administration. This is not going to get the headlines that, you know, leaving the Paris Climate Accord got, but in terms of public health, this is vitally important, and I just hope that the Biden administration follows the science, tightens the regulations. They'll get sued, and then you have Department of Justice defending the EPA with their decision.
Anyone else on this?
And I just want to touch on something that the article talked about. You know, so many housing developments, and and communities of color that you will often find these industrial plants, you know, built around, and the water, you know, that's being consumed in those environments. These are issues that must be dealt with. And part of what saddened me to hear about some of the environmental, issues that were inclusive in the original Biden infrastructure plan, you know, that's what gave me pause. It's like, are we abandoning, you know, the commitment right. that we gave to people of color who about, you know, making sure that whatever it is that we do in rebuilding our nation, that we're not going to subject low-income folks to communities where they're not going to be able to enjoy, you know, fresh water and fresh air. I certainly hope that certain portions of this environmental infrastructure that this administration is not going to compromise on.
And that's why I'm so adamant about the clean energy provisions not being stripped out of the infrastructure bill. If you want to reduce soot emissions from coal plants, cement plants, you know, you need the investment in clean energy. And David put his finger right on it. This is an environmental justice issue. For instance, the people living in the south end of Albany, near the port of Albany, the people living in Saratoga Sites, public housing next to the Norlite incinerator. We all know if these facilities were in more affluent communities, they would not be emitting so much air pollution. But we've normalized this practice of low-income communities and communities of color just get stuck with these really polluting facilities. And it's not just getting stuck. They're cited there for a reason. I'm starting to work more closely with groups in Louisiana and Texas in an area called Cancer Alley because of the concentration of petrochemical facilities, many that make plastic. Imagine, you know, Alan, your family is in New Orleans. This is in Louisiana along the river. And we've normalized the phrase Cancer Alley because there are such high rates of cancer from these petrochemical facilities. We really need the Biden administration to tighten the regulations, but also provide the desperately needed funding in infrastructure packages to move us away from fossil fuels and move us away from petrochemical investments, which literally are making people very, very sick and sometimes dying in these communities. The cancer rates are off the charts.
Anybody else on that?
Yes, regarding environmental soot, I'm against it. But I wanted to just circle back to something Judith raised again, tying this into the infrastructure package where we started. Did I hear you say earlier, Judith, that because if in fact the environmental elements are stripped from the infrastructure bill, that it would have trouble getting votes from some Democrats? If I've captured that remark accurately, does that mean that those people who would be disappointed / angry that there's no environmental provisions would nevertheless block the provisions that are the traditional infrastructure provisions that are in the bill?
Well, this is a game of chicken, but as of today, June 11th, you have people like Senator Markey and Senator Ron Wyden saying if there are not climate change provisions in the infrastructure bill, they are not going to support it.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I understand the frustration and the anger, but is it throwing out the baby with the bathwater by doing it that way, by going that route? It's a really, you hate to see the Democrats warring with each other when they've got enough trouble warring with the other side.
Well, Judith, you have your long-range goals, and I respect them so much. But you got a letter from Lynn who says, because of Judith, I ordered toothpaste in a jar, Bite Company, 4 months supply. So there are those victories that you can count on.
Thank you. Step by step.
Did you know there was toothpaste in a jar?
I didn't know there was toothpaste in a jar, but I'm going to go trade in my lawnmower for a sickle.
Better exercise.
All right. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us this morning. Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Ira, thanks for pitching in the last minute. I really, very nice of you.
See you in the studio next week.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that as well. Judith, always good to talk to you. David, very nice to have you as my companion in the studio this morning. We'll talk soon. Coming up next, the Congressional Corner.